Welcome back, dear listeners, to season 4 of the Dish with Dina podcast. I'm slowly getting back to publishing a regular schedule of episodes, and I have got a whole new batch of interviews that I'm excited to share with you this season, one of which is today's guest, Allison Wong. Allison and I dish about our relationships with our grandparents, seasonal foods from across the globe, and the power of the written word. Allison is a mixed race Chinese German American who was born in the Bronx, New York, but currently splits her time between London and New York City as a food anthropologist. As a writer, Allison examines her experiences with identity politics and her relationship with her own heritage. And we have got a special limited time offer at the end of today's episode, so please make sure you pay attention, stay tuned, and listen in for our giveaway details for a written piece of work by Allison. Now you can sit back, enjoy the conversation, and let's dish. Welcome, Allison Wong, to the Dish with Dina podcast. I am so excited to be having you here today as my guest because it's been quite a while since you and I have seen each other. And so thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come and chat with me.
Thank you so much, Dina. It's so great to be here. It has been such a long time since we've last seen each other.
I know. I cannot wait to catch up. And so let's start with our origin story. Will you share with our listeners how we did come to meet, how we know each other?
Great. Yes, we met at Lehman College in the Bronx. I believe we worked on a number of different projects together, specifically with the health foods project that you were originally working on with the sustainability initiatives at Lehman at the time. I think that's how we first met.
Yes, I did a number of things. I returned to school as a full-time second careerer, returning student, and I got very involved with a lot of things in my first couple of semesters. And I definitely had some collaborations with the nutrition clubs and different kinds of leadership programs on there. And that is how we met. So my memories are the same as yours, thank goodness. I appreciate that. So speaking of memories, Allison, let's go through a little bit about earlier days of you. Can you share with us who you are, where you grew up, and some of your earliest specific to food memories that you might have from back in your early childhood days?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think with my earliest memories, it has to be going back to my grandmother's kitchen. And I feel like that's such a cliche thing to say, but I think it really ties into, you know, how I've grown up and the foods that I've eaten. So, you know, I grew up in a mixed race household, and my dad coming from Hong Kong. My mom grew up in Queens originally, but her family is from Germany. So, you know, I had a mixed background. And so the food was also pretty mixed growing up. And, you know, the earliest food memories that I've had to be, you know, rice and black bean sauce and also certain kinds of German dishes like potato pancakes and, you know, very clashing dishes. But I just remember kind of feeling so fulfilled by having so many different kinds of food to eat.
That is something that I was going to ask you too, because when we talk about global foods in different regions, there are definitely some staple items that are fairly prevalent no matter where you travel the world, like rice and different grains and so on. But the way people prepare things can be quite different. So can you explain a little bit further as to maybe what some of the traditional dishes were, and maybe even some of the celebrations that you had, since you did have multiple races and different heritages going on in your household at the time?
Celebrations with Chinese and German culture, it's very food centric. So, you know, growing up with certain dishes within Chinese culture, like lobster and black bean sauce or Mai Fun noodles, those were the dishes that I remember the most. And Oktoberfest, you know, of course I didn't drink beer growing up, but, you know, the meals around, you know, Weisswurst and potato pancakes were just something that always kind of are very memorable in terms of my culture.
And just out of curiosity, have you been able to travel to your parents' or your grandparents' homeland as well?
I actually, fortunately, I was able to do so through
The first one was through China. So I went to the China Exchange with Queen's College, I believe. So I did a study abroad there. And with Germany, I was able to go on a personal trip there as well. So being able to go back was a great opportunity to taste the food there.
I love that. And I know we're going to talk a little bit more too about your current pursuits because you do have some travel involved in that as well. If I'm not mistaken, you're in two different places now these days, correct?
Yes, currently I am living in London, but I also spend some time in New York, closer to my family.
And so, what brought you into that region of the world?
I think going into London was mainly due to my master's program in food anthropology at the University of London, SOAS. So I found the program years ago. I kept following up with them. And it's such a niche major that there's not too many places teaching food anthropology. So the opportunity came that I was able to go, and I decided to join.
I want to go back for a second because now throwing London into the mix too. Tell me a little bit about the food experiences there. What kind of things are you more likely to go to or eat or create for yourselves? How much different is that from your traditional foods? And then also, are there things that you miss? Like, is there anything that, I mean, London's obviously quite a big city. So, are there any things that might not be readily available to you that you kind of long for once you're in that area?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think with London, it is a different city than New York, definitely in terms of its food culture. I think with food cultures, it has to do a lot with migration patterns and who stays and who brings their, food cultures with them. Being in London, I think with Chinese food, there is a Chinese population there, but in terms of New York population of Cantonese migrants, there is a difference, and I have seen some differences with, the supply of ingredients and the different restaurants that are available there. So it's hard to answer this question because I feel like there's so many things that I miss and the things new things that I do eat there, which is there's so many different ways of thinking about it.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're adaptable in the sense of you go with the flow of whatever is available. And of course, you might long for some things, but there's stuff there that you can definitely have that you've grown accustomed to and has become part of your new tradition in a way of whatever it is that you're doing now for yourself in this, in this current life.
Yes, definitely. I think I've had a lot of English breakfast since I've been there, and I think it's been very for I've been very fortunate to be able to adapt to the way of living there. I think the food supply chains have been delicious. The vegetables and the fruits there are so much more accessible and fresher in some senses. I think being able to kind of adapt to the differences is very meaningful to me, yeah.
I definitely want to talk a little bit more about that too. That's something that a lot of the people that I've had on this podcast who are either global travelers or from other countries, and when they go back, they often say the same thing that they have a noticeable difference, whether it's taste or freshness, or even sometimes things that don't make them as sick than when they are eating in America, meaning like gastrointestinal problems or flare-ups of some allergies or intolerances that they might have, they don't feel that when they are overseas. And so I don't know if you can answer this with what it is that you're doing, but can you speak to what you think might be the issue there as far as food supply and food systems that make it so, in that sense, like you just said, that just tastes a little bit fresher, more readily available?
I think the regulations within London are a bit more protective to allow for farmers to access more resources and also having farms that are closer. I think that in the UK, the local food movement allows for people to be much more used to foods not being available. So there's certain fruits and vegetables that aren't necessarily available year-round. And some people pay more attention to it within London. I feel that's something that people have on their mind. But beyond that, I think the structures and the structures of the supply chains allow for more locally based farms.
That makes so much sense. And I know that in the United States, we definitely want everything now, yesterday, convenience. And we don't really recognize the fact that sometimes things are in and out of seasons. It just feels like everything's always at the ready. And so when we do have foods that are available year round, you definitely can recognize changes in flavor, changes in nutritional value, changes in price as well, because things are kind of like being forced into the system when they're not normally grown in that particular time, or they're coming from across different states or traveling quite far that don't necessarily make it as sustainable just because we want everything right now. And that has to do with a wide variety of foods, whether it's plant-based foods or things like salmon. And that is something that I'm hoping people tend to recognize a little bit more, because I do believe that we have the ability to support a better, more sustainable food supply. But I don't know if that is realistic or not, depending on our country's culture, unfortunately. So let me go back for a second here and ask you too about some of the earlier food memories that you had mentioned, the way that you had been brought up, your food and family dynamic, any of those behaviors, positively or negatively, what influenced you to get into where you're going now? Can you give us a little bit of how that path happened from your, early childhood to your schooling to what you're doing now with food anthropology? And of course, in that answer, please also define that, because I too am not entirely sure of what that means.
Great, yes, definitely. With food anthropology, it's the study of humans and food. So it's under the subsection of cultural anthropology, in which you can actually study humans and their traditions and the ways of living. And how I define food anthropology is being able to study how food and humans interact, whether that's through the structures that we create or if it's through the meanings that we give food. For me personally, how I kind of ended up in this position, I think food has always been more meaningful to me culturally. I've been able to kind of connect with food in a way that has allowed me to connect with my cultures. So growing up, I've had, some struggle with my identity due to kind of not really having other people who had similar mixed race backgrounds. Having these two different, very different cultures raise me, allowed me to become the individual I am today. But it also kind of showed me that I am different than other people, which is a great thing. But, I think having to explain, who I was made me kind of question who I was. So I started to question it a lot growing up. And, with my family, my grandparents on the Chinese side, they didn't really speak much English growing up. So my connection with them was a bit limited. Although, I think I was raised really with my grandmother. So the way that we connected the most, I would say, is through food. She always fed me the meals that I remember to this day. And, to my culture is how, through food is how I actually connected with my culture.
Oh, that is so beautiful. Did she live near to where you
Yes.
were?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, my grandparents immigrated from Hong Kong originally. They moved to Vancouver and then to the Bronx, actually. So,
Ah.
very Bronx-based family, definitely.
Hop, skip, and a jump. Okay, so let's then focus a little bit more on a current day in the life of you. So, can you tell us a little bit about where these travels bring you, what you do when you are in New York, and what you do when you're in London?
So in London, currently I'm acting as a food researcher. So I work with various different clients on different food research needs. Some could be, certain financial companies doing due diligence on food related markets. But beyond that, also trying to find certain clients that actually allow me to, research different food topics. So the last project I worked on was a food and wine app, which was a really fascinating role to join in on.
It marries the tech and the, kind of the modern types of things that we're doing with also the history of learning about, like you said, human behavior in relationship to food. And so Speaking along those lines, I know that you also have some written pieces, and I was wondering if you wanted to share a little bit about that too, because this is something that you and I had spoken about, and we might also integrate for our listeners as we promote your episode when it finally publishes, to include them in this conversation as well, because I'm not sure how many people are really aware of the stance that you are taking and the information that you are sharing. So I would love to have them learn a little bit more about what that is.
I was able to publish a piece on an autoethnography. And so just to kind of back up a bit, an autoethnography really involves, a researcher writing about a topic of great personal relevance, but also being able to situate their own experiences within a broader social context. So in the book in which my piece is published, called Children of the People, all the contributors are writing about very personal topics, but being able to kind of situate their own experiences in these, universal experiences of others. For me, what I focused on was my experience with my mixed race identity and kind of learning ways in which I can, truly identify with myself and feel like I belong within, my own culture, but also within American or even the UK culture, to be able to see how I fit in. But beyond that, being able to use food to be able to do that.
How did you come about even learning to be able to contribute a piece to this publication?
It was actually through CUNY. So CUNY actually sponsored, through the Center of Humanities, an autoethnography course. It was an amazing opportunity to actually work with other CUNY students on being able to develop these stories, because as a CUNY graduate, I think it's hard to be able to tell the stories of CUNY because there's so many of them. And so being able to work on this project was so great because you were able to work with so many different CUNY students.
Right. And so just to clarify for anyone not familiar with what CUNY is, that's the City University of New York. And throughout our region here, we have a variety of different campuses. And Lehman College is one of many of the CUNY campuses. And that's where Allison and I had met, which we talked about in the introduction. And so this really, I think, helps give people an understanding of some opportunities that might be available to them that are outside perhaps their scope of what their career is or what they think their pursuits are, because it really touches on the personal aspect of it. So it's not like you have to be involved in the food sciences or in anthropology in order to be able to submit a piece like this. You just have to be aware of what's going on around you. And so that brings me to my question of where you're at right now with your career, your professional development. How are you staying in touch? How are you keying in on networking and building connections, especially like you said, this isn't a very broad profession in that sense. Like could it possibly feel quite isolating, or as you're starting to learn more about it, you're understanding a larger, group of people or a circle and network that you have available to you to bounce ideas off of and again to make connections and so on.
Yeah, I think it is such a niche, subject that it sometimes does feel a bit isolating. But I feel like once you meet people who are interested in food or are interested in the topic of food and culture, I feel like there is just an extreme connection between people. So I feel like the mentors that I've gained through networking, as well as the community that I've built, being able to talk with those people around me has been extremely helpful.
Oh, that's lovely. And tell me a little bit too now about the thing that we're talking about as far as our giveaway. Can you share with a little bit? We're going to obviously tease this when the episode comes out, but can you share a little bit about what you might want to offer to our listeners and how we might be providing that information to them once the episode airs?
Great. Yes. So I would love the ability to do a giveaway for the book. Being able to share it with more people would be amazing. It'd be the Children of the People book that just got published in August of 2022, in which my piece, Mirroring Ninan, is published in.
This is so exciting. I always love to be able to promote anything when I have guests on, like to promote anything that they're doing, and just not that I have, this giant audience, but I think one of the reasons why I started this podcast was just to make this world, whether it's a social media world, a media world, or even just connecting with other people in the virtual space, because I did start this podcast during the beginning of the pandemic, a little bit smaller, like to really connect people with saying, I think we have a lot more similarities than differences when we really look at the broader scope of who we are as humans. And that, even as you were talking about your grandma, that's how I felt too. We lived upstairs and downstairs from each other. So I remember being in that kitchen and having my hands in the dough as she was making pasta from scratch and having her be there just as a sounding board for me as a young child. And also, being the person that I would run away from my parents and go and be in her second floor of the family home that we shared. And so when you're talking, like I'm thinking to myself too, there's a lot of stories that I think I can share. And I'm sure that other people who are listening to our conversation who do get to read your piece and that book in particular too, things might resonate with them. And so was there anything else in that publication that spoke to you once it was published? Like, did you read anybody else's stories that resonated with you, that connected and made you feel like you had some similar or similarities, I should say, with people that you might not have even known?
Definitely. I think it's amazing to kind of see that power of writing and being able to see how you can connect with someone by reading their writing. There's so many pieces that I do connect with. I think the most I've connected with is a piece by Lee Painter Kim, who is also a mixed race American. And I think there's so much more that can be built on. This kind of research, especially on mixed race identities. And I think it's really impressive to kind of see this book with two pieces on it has been amazing. But being able to read it, I actually very much connected with her experience, even though she is Korean and I'm Chinese. It's still a very interesting connection to make with through writing.
Yeah. And again, this is bringing this whole large world together, especially in times like this when we have been through so much. We felt, as we were saying before, things could be quite isolating. And we have all been online for so many years that I feel like there's a little bit of a disconnect. It's almost like I forgot how to interact with human people. And so things like that really make it feel like we're having that connection with people that could be considered strangers, but we do have that resonance that happens in there when we learn other people's stories and want to learn other people's stories. And so now moving into your future direction, tell us a little bit about what you do to stay current with what you're doing, but also where do you see yourself going, whether it's in this field or doing something related or unrelated to it within the next, say 2, 5, or 10 years. What do you see for yourself in the future?
Yeah, that's a great question of keeping up. I think it's hard to keep up nowadays because there's so much media that is being spread that I just want to consume as much as possible. But also, find time to create is very difficult, within the stressful experience of, trying to work and trying to continue creative pursuits. It is difficult. But I think with keeping up, there are a lot of food newsletters that have come out of the pandemic. And being able to kind of key into those has been very helpful. But beyond newsletters, I think for me personally, continuing to write about my experiences and hopefully creating a larger piece to speak about my mixed race identity in food.
So you mentioned social media, and this comes up in almost every episode that we have, because obviously I will be sharing your handles if you want me to when we publish this episode. But what kind of role does social media play with what you're doing right now? And how, like both indirectly and directly, and what is your role in it too?
Yes, so I think social media has done a great service to connecting people all around the world. I think with my food anthropology program, for example, there were people in the program that, we met for the first time and we were able to stay connected through Instagram and Twitter. But beyond that, kind of creating different ways of thinking about food and being able to post about those issues has been extremely meaningful to me that people are, liking my posts on Twitter saying, oh, this is so interesting. I never thought about it this way. And so being able to kind of share that type of work, even if it's just a random thought on food, being able to do that is extremely impressive.
Yeah. Is that where you usually live on social media, primarily on Twitter?
Twitter and Instagram, I would say. I think, with food media on Instagram, I know that there's a lot of food photography that kind of dominates that space. But I am trying to go more into Instagram as well.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a very unique way that the algorithm works in Instagram. And so, depending on what people's messages are, it can be a little bit frustrating because Instagram feels like it's doing its own thing sometimes. And now they're forcing us to do these reels. And I'm not such a like video person, especially when it feels a little bit forced. And so, it's interesting to see how social media has changed. I mean, it felt very, pat and consistent in some way. And now I people I'm following, I can't even find anymore unless I'm actively looking through their accounts. So there's a lot of pros and cons, a lot of pros and cons with social media.
Definitely. I feel like we feel like we're also always connected when we're really not. And so making also the time for those in-person connections, now that we're kind of opening up a bit since COVID, I think has been great. But I think it's both a thorn in my side, but also a great tool.
Right, a necessary evil, as it were. So, as we're winding down a little bit in our conversation, I just want to find out if there's anything, any message, mission, anything that you would like to share with our listeners that we didn't necessarily cover, or that I might not have, or I might have accidentally not asked or forgotten to ask you.
Yeah, I think in terms of the power of writing is so interesting because it can allow you to speak about your own story and whether or not you decide to publish it or send it out into the world is not really what writing is about. The writing experience is more for you personally. And if you do choose to, share it and tell other stories that may not be told in the past, may have not been told in the past, it's a very enlightening experience. And I think whether or not you decide to kind of go down that writing path or want to publish, it's still a very powerful tool to go into.
Oh, that's so lovely. And we're talking even something like just journaling X amount of minutes a day could even be something that feels cathartic and allow you to get your thoughts on paper, or in a sense, like you said, taking you down memory lane and not just focusing so much on the current situations that are happening, but like getting outside your head a little bit.
Definitely. And I think even the questions that you've asked me today are so poignant in the sense that we're trying to tell these stories of, what makes us, who makes us, what foods do we eat that make us. So I think it's pretty cool to be able to write those stories down, and kind of tell those stories to yourself and to others.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you. That's so sweet. Thank you for saying that. I mean, lately, I don't want to air any of my issues here, but honestly, I don't mind being transparent. But lately, I've been very frustrated and stressed out. And I've been looking back at some of my entries because I do try to journal, or at least just do a brain dump every day in some way. And a lot of it just feels so negative all the time. Like just, I'm spread thin and blah, blah, blah. And I'm angry about a lot of things and I'm going to complain. But I forget that I have a lot to offer. And I think even having this conversation with you too, you're making me dig deep into my brain about some of my own fond memories, my own familial things, my own experiences with food in different situations, whether I'm preparing it for myself or other people, or how it plays a role in the things that I do as a dietitian with, meal preparation and sharing insight and supporting people that I work with in making sure that they feel like their cultural foods are not being taken away from them just because they have to make some modifications to support a particular or manage a disease or, things like that. And so I think I might give myself a bit of a homework assignment that the next time I do some writing to focus a little bit on the things that I feel really are important and that are driving my why and my mission, and or come up with conclusions or solutions with the stuff that is making me a little crazy. How do you stay active in that? Like, what is your routine? As far as you were saying before, with it's sometimes a little hard to find time to even put that together, put writing down. What is it that you are doing to keep yourself somewhat productive or efficient on any given day?
I ask myself that, and I can be pretty hard on myself in terms of saying, oh, well, haven't written today. Oh, it's going to happen tomorrow, and it doesn't happen. But I think with I read this book that I really loved, years ago, The Artist's Way, and they created the idea of writing pages. And I started doing that, and I know when I'm not on it. I know I feel it. That I haven't written and I haven't gotten it out of me. And creating that, It's essentially creating this ritual of doing 3 pages per day, and writing every day, even if you have nothing to write, even if you have nothing to give. And it creates almost like a muscle memory of, oh, I have to write today. This is something I have to do. So once you're in the groove, you're in it. And if you get out of it, it's okay. You jump back in, at a later day, and maybe this isn't the time that you need to write. But I think with creating that muscle memory of like, there's something missing here. And it's usually if I've, fallen off writing. So I've really enjoyed reading that book because it allowed me to create that ritual.
This is a book that has been around for, I want to say, 30 something years, maybe, right? 1992. I'm looking it up online. So I'm cheating right now, looking this up. Julia Cameron is the author of it. And this comes up a ton. I used to work in publishing, and people who, obviously, I was around writers and people working on manuscripts. And then even the employees were, we loved reading and writing. And so that came up a ton. So you just kind of reminded me of that book. I think I even have a copy of it here in my apartment someplace. So that's a great way to walk through some steps that you said almost becomes part of you in that sense, like brushing your teeth or washing your face before you go to bed, and being able to incorporate this into your daily routine as a soulful and very important type of activity that allows you to feel centered in that sense.
Yeah, it was a it's impressive how many years it's gotten republished as well. There's different versions of it now.
Right.
There's workbooks, and I think it really touches on a point that writing can be a very powerful tool. And I think that it's not just a powerful tool to get your story out there, but it's a powerful tool to be able to kind of meditate on how you're feeling on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I think so. I'm trying to think too, in with the not just the audience of my listeners, but also people I meet with on a daily basis. So primarily students. Social media. So yes, that's a form of writing. If you're submitting papers or you're doing discussion board activities for your school or you're preparing captions for something, I think it really lends itself to remember there's an authenticity there. Like try not to just regurgitate things that you've read or post something online that you think is supposed to be there for the sake of just having content, but instead allow yourself to be vulnerable, allow yourself to be transparent, allow yourself to be authentic in whatever those writings are that you might be putting out into the world. Because again, going back to that resonating feeling of there might be somebody out there that connects with it. So it's not just words on a piece of paper or words in the atmosphere on a social media platform, but somebody might make a true connection as to what that information means to you and what it means to them.
Definitely. I think, growing up, I always struggled with making sure that my, writing was perfect and making sure that my writing, had a beginning, middle, and end. And, I think one thing with the writing pages is that it doesn't matter. You're writing for yourself, but it can also resonate with others. And I think being able to kind of let yourself have a voice within your
Yeah.
writing is very powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really hoping that you empowered people who are listening to this right now who might have had that want in their lives before that haven't really done anything with it, to encourage them to go and write something. Just write something, write anything, and get more consistent at it. So, Allison, I have my final questions to ask you as we're wrapping up our interview here. And those are my figurative and literal question of what is on your plate today? So can you share with us right now, it is kind of midday on a mid in the beginning of the week. And so what do you have on your plate as far as what are you working on that you're going to be continuing to do or finishing to do and wrapping up today? And then I always like to know, what are you planning on eating next? What's your next meal?
Great question. I'll start with the first meal one. I am currently going out to dinner tonight. I believe I'll be going to get some Thai food with my cousin. Very excited about that. But in terms of what's on my plate, continuing to work on my book, being able to write more about these personal experiences with food, and being able to kind of continue the research that I've been doing over the past few years.
See, and that's the thing, commitment and consistency. That's how you keep your end goal in mind and your goals significant and making sure that you prioritize stuff like that. It's not always easy, but it's something that has to be done if you want to get to where you want to go.
Yes, definitely.
I love it. Well, this has been a true pleasure catching up with you and learning a little bit more about a lot of the things that I, you know, haven't really known about since we haven't crossed paths in such a long time. So thank you again, Allison, for taking the time to share with us, to walk us down your memory lane, and to also, as I said, you know, empower us to take into the account of the power of writing. Hopefully we'll see a lot more stories come out of this.
Yes, I hope to hear of the other stories that do come out of this podcast. If you do write anything, please send it to me.
Thank you so much for joining me this week on the Dish with Dina podcast. I am Dina D'Alessandro, registered dietitian, nutritionist, founder, and chief executive life changer at Dish with Dina, and I'm also your host. If you like what you heard, I would be so grateful if you could subscribe to this podcast, leave a review, and share this with others who you think might benefit from what we have to offer on these episodes. You can also join my mailing list at dishwithdina.com or email me at info@dishwithdina.com with questions, comments, feedback, and if you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, because everybody eats and we all have a story to share. I hope you tune back in next week when we dish again.